Kentucky.
What do I do?
Yeah.
I'm a horse doctor.
That's what I, and that was a good place to go to be a horse doctor, wasn't it?
Not the only place, really, if you want to get them, the good horses. If you can work on backyard pleasure horses most anywhere, but they tend to be nothing but big puppy dogs and fight back.
We flew over the farm, you know, we played down there in the tournament this
right.
last year.
Yeah.
And we flew out of Ann Arbor and then landed right at the airport there. And
yeah, that's
over the farms, and you see them, it's quite nice.
That's the Calumet Farm, sort of right across the street
right,
from the airport, one of the biggest.
Right, and it was so nice to see all those things. You get a nice, good view of it. We were in a private jet, so it worked out all right.
If you ever get down again, holler and...
I wish I'd known.
Yeah, that's, you know, you can get on to some of the big ones and see some of the stallions and stuff.
See, well, we did. We just flew down, and then we went over to the University of Kentucky, and they were having spring football practice.
Mm-hmm.
So Bo went over to watch practice and talk to the coach a little bit. Then we looked at their facilities. Then we came back to the hotel where the team was staying and then headed over to Rupp Arena to watch the game and then flew back home.
Where'd you stay? What hotel?
Kind of run a blank on that one. I didn't stay at the hotel. We just drove up where the team was.
Oh, okay.
And just visited for a little bit. Bo went and talked to him.
So you were just in and out?
Pardon me?
You were just in and out?
Yeah, we were that quick, yeah.
Oh, boy.
We played Virginia that day, and we blew them out. It was one of those games after beating North Carolina, and then it was just one of those things. And we blew them out and then came right back home.
Well, that's kind of short stay.
To the Final Four.
Got to get down sometime and stick around. This is a nice place to visit.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah, I had visited before. Our basketball team a lot of years ago was down there in the tournament when they used to play in a different gymnasium. So maybe you weren't in the country at that time.
Well, I've been here about 15 years now, I guess.
No, this was longer than that.
You've been with Michigan since you, how long now?
Well, what I did, I was with the Tigers, and I was coaching. And then I left the Tigers to come as baseball coach at Michigan. And I came here for 4 years, 59 through 62. Then I went back to the Tigers as farm director till 1970. I went in the fall of 62 and until 70, and in July of 70 I came back to Michigan as an assistant athletic director. Bump Elliott was the associate director at the time, and he left and went to Iowa as athletic director. Then Dave Strack moved up, and then I took Dave's spot. Then Dave went to Arizona, and I moved up as associate director. So came here, that's 70, so here it is, 89. That's a couple of years ago.
Time does go by on you.
It sure does.
You were Tigers farm director when they had some pretty good teams there.
Well, I was most pleased with the 68 World Series team. Everybody in the farm, except Norm Cash, came up through the farm system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Cash with a trade for Demeter, Steve Demeter.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
from Cleveland. And that's the way the deal went. So everybody else, you know, McAuliffe, Wirt, Euler, Stanley, Northrop, Horton, Kaline, everybody came through the farm system pre-hand.
I was
regulars.
I was in school that year, and that was before a night World Series game, so I cut several classes. Tigers were always my favorite team.
Yeah, well, it was quite a series. You know, we got behind, and then really came back. We were down 3-1. And then came back and won it.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of a key play was that play at the plate with Brock. Had he slid, there'd been no question, but he didn't slide for some reason. And Horton, there was a base hit to left field, and Horton threw him out at home plate. And it was just one of those things, you know. It's just why he didn't slide, I'll never know.
I'm sure he's wondered, too.
He'll give you all the arguments in the world and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you review it, and they've done it in slow motion, it shows that Freehand has got his foot blocking the plate, and Brock misses, and Freehand spins around, and then tags him, and the umpire saw it all and said, you're out.
I think Freehand, living around here, so of course saw Johnny Bench, but I think Freehand was as, you know, maybe not, a lot of guys saw a lot more, but I thought he was as good as Bench as far as the glove work.
Well, there's no question about it. See, Bench changed the style of catching. He became a one-handed catcher,
mm-hmm.
more like the first baseman mitt. And Freehand, the ball never got by Freehand. I think probably Bench had a stronger arm than Freehand, but Freehand's technique was so good that he would release the ball quickly. And I remember I recruited Bill, and we spent a lot of time with him. Now, you got talent to work with, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But we spent a lot of time with him and just developed his, you know, he was so good, like on pop flies, used a drill where you get down on one knee with your head down and you hit a pop fly, and he'd come up, find it, said, I think it ought to be right, boom, and he'd catch it. So he got so proficient at it, it was unbelievable. So his techniques were different than Bench. Bench was a stronger arm, but all one-hand stuff. And I'm not a teacher of one-hand catching. Now, you don't take a Johnny Bench and make a lousy catcher at him if he's got the ability to do that.
See? Oh, yeah, but that's what you got the other hand for anytime you're trying to catch the ball, it seems like.
Well, it's so much two-handed stuff that everybody wants to one-hand, and not everybody can do it, and it develops some bad habits. You don't see... You have a thing in catching where you say, if you move your hands, move your feet. If you move your feet, move your hands. And Bill had that good technique, you know, blocking the ball. Pitcher should have taken him out for dinner all the time. He stopped many pitches, you know. It would have been wild pitches that weren't because he blocked them so well.
Didn't, now, at the time of his retirement, I believe, I don't know if he still is, wasn't he had the top fielding percentage in history?
Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Does he still, do you know?
I don't know offhand. I'm not familiar with that statistic.
They've got the glove so much bigger nowadays, easier to knock.
Type thing, you see. Again, they've gone to more of the broken part where it's more like a first baseman, and that's what makes these guys one-hand catchers.
Mm-hmm.
I have difficulty teaching that technique.
I have coached kids baseball for years and years and years now, and... In this area, you know, if Johnny Bench did it, it's got to be right. It's awful hard. You know, all these boys don't have Bench's talent.
That's what it is. And again, they develop bad habits, and that's what you don't want to have happen. And the ideal thing, and it's just that his is unique, is different, and more difficult. And if he can master that, fine.
Sure.
And kids seem to want to do, you know, they emulate the guys that they see, which is their... They're superstars and so on like that.
We had one boy wanted to crouch like Tony Payne and catch one-handed like Johnny Bench.
Yeah.
poor kid. We ended up playing him in the outfield.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. See, what they have to realize, and you get a man on base, you can't get in that position like Payne.
Oh, God, no.
Because you can never throw a guy out.
Yeah.
Because you always have to anticipate that anybody is going to run on you before it happens. So every time you come out, you're ready to throw a guy out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the position of the pitch dictates how you move to the ball.
Well, most of the boys that we coach don't have good enough arm to throw anybody out anyhow, so that's that's secondary. Freehand's your new baseball coach.
Yes, Yeah, Bill has always wanted to coach. He really has. And when he retired from the Tigers, he was in the range of making, say, $75,000 or $80,000. And so in the off season, what he had done, he had prepared himself in the automotive business as a rep and so on, got organized that way. And I think the Tigers probably wanted him to, maybe gave him the opportunity to manage, but he couldn't afford to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go down and run a, say, the AA ball club, in those days they'd maybe pay $15,000, maybe $20,000 max. And so what he did, he went into business, and then he kept his hand in the game by going to spring training and working with young catchers and the Tigers and so on. They always has wanted to coach. Now, in a modern-day situation, with the type of money that they're making, and they invest properly, when they're finished with the game, what they could do is take a lesser amount of money to be able to stay in.
Sure.
In other words, he could have done it on modern-day situation, but he couldn't afford to do it then. Because, you know, if he were playing today, I'm conservatively speaking, he'd be making, what, $2 million a year?
With his ability and the power he had.
That's right. I mean, so that's the difference. But he's always wanted to coach. And he's a very loyal, dedicated Michigan guy. He's got maize and blue in him. When we recruited him, that was the first thing we do. We have the guys bend over, and you got a big long needle, and it's got maize and blue in it, and you hit him in the butt. So that's what we do.
You don't have to give any boosters?
No, you really don't have to give any boosters. And then also, he played football here. He didn't know when he came. He's a Catholic boy and always wanted to go to Notre Dame. And he was talking about school, and when he visited Notre Dame, they said, well, in spring football will be in. He said, well, what about baseball in the spring? He said, well, when football's over with, then you go out for baseball.
Boy.
So I said, Bill, if you want to come to Michigan, you can do whatever you want to do. If you want to go out for football, I have no objection.
Mm-hmm.
So now he signed the baseball scholarship and came, and then because the scouts said, hey, don't play football, you're going to get hurt. So now he just He's watching the kids kick the football around for a couple of days. He can't stand it because, you know, he's young.
Sure.
He loves the game. And so he said, "Mr. Lund, do you mind if I go out for football?" I said, "Evans, no." So he went out there, and he was the best football player out there.
Big boy.
And he was. He didn't know what position to play in high school. He was a linebacker and a quarterback. So he went out for end here, and he ended up being an excellent football player. And I'm convinced he would have been an All-American had he stayed. He would have. But that's when there was no draft in baseball.
Right.
So the offers got so high, and the folks came to us and said, "Hey, the offers are over $100,000." He said, "Hey, take it and go."
Well, you can't turn something down like that, especially, 25 years ago?
And see, he had 2 years of school in. And percentages showed before the college rule, when there was no college rule, the guys that dropped out or never went, they never got their degrees. If you went 2 years, it jumped up 50%. And then they jumped to the, it was like a four-year rule, but there was an age 21 factor. And now it's a three-year rule, three-year junior year, and most kids will get the 3 years in and then sign a contract.
What percentage finished college? Any idea?
That I don't know what finished, but you can figure if you've got 3 years under your belt, chances are you'll come back.
I hope so. But
getting his degree, and I'd say Barry Larkin is with Cincinnati right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's very close because he could come back after that first season out, and so I would bet that he's probably maybe a semester and a half away from his degree.
I've got a son that wants to play professional baseball. I think he'd kill to do it, and he'll be a senior in high school this next year. And
does he have good talent?
He's a left-handed pitcher that every year they start him down as a fifth or sixth man in the rotation, but every year he ends up being the number one. I guess like they said about Lopat, the fans would come out of the stands after the game and want a tryout. But yeah, he's good. He's not great. I'm trying to talk him into definitely going to college. He'll probably get a small scholarship.
Recommendation would be to go to college.
He keeps saying if he gets a chance to play, he'll do it and go to college in the off season. But I'm afraid of that.
That won't happen. That won't happen. In other words, if he shows some talent, what will happen is they'll want him to go to the instructional league.
Yeah.
And then you're in the instructional league, and so consequently, then you miss school again.
Oh.
And then pretty soon you meet some young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get married. Then you have a family.
I'm not sure he's discovered young ladies yet. That's at least
over. He discovers them. And so my recommendation is that that you go to school first. And the other factor is that you mature and grow up a little bit. You're better prepared mentally going out. And that's the toughest adjustment.
I couldn't. He's 17 years old, and you read about guys that were playing in the major leagues at 17, even though maybe it was the war years. I don't see how this boy could do that.
I tell you, I don't know how, as a dad, sometimes that's the last person they listen to. They listen
to
like the local pool hall.
Definitely.
But really, what he ought to do is mature and grow up, and then he'll be just so much better prepared. And then what he can do, he can play X amount of games in college, and if he's got some talent, he can play in some summer leagues like the Cape Cod League, and there are a few of them around. And get some extra games in there.
Yeah, we've got a summer league down here. It's not anything like Cape Cod League, of course.
No, but I mean, you know, that's more of a college league that you venture into and mature and grow up. And they're, you know, it's difficult to play in those leagues. You have to have some talent.
Oh, yeah.
But you do, you get away for a little bit from home. You get adjusted there. You get away from home when you go to school and get adjusted. And so it's just a maturing standpoint.
I'm going to play this part of the tape for him later on today. Let him hear it.
You should, really. I've been at it a long time. And the other thing, the percentage was maybe just slightly different as far as expansion is concerned, but 100% of guys that signed, only 3% make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, I've heard it. I didn't realize. I've heard it was extremely low, though. You know,
it is, and then they don't stay all that long. So there's a lot of factors involved.
But, each kid, it's you know, the car accident is going to happen to somebody else. And,
I know it. Yeah. I know it. I understand that. But really, I've had to release kids when I was farm director, and you know how badly they felt and so on like that, and should have gone out and gone to school.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be angry at my scouts that they didn't sign them. And see, the scouts' job, and I'm not knocking them, is to try and sign a ball player. And maybe there's some percentage. If they sign 100 guys, 3 guys make it, then they're great scouts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that type of thing. And so but if you go along and just look, look at a Will Clark, for example, or look at a Tom Seaver. Look at some guys like that. There's other exceptions to it, but you'll find a lot of guys that were college guys and did quite well.
Yeah, that's a good arguing point. Clark is one of his two or three favorite players.
Oh, well, yeah. And that would be a good one. And he played, was he Mississippi or Mississippi State?
One of those, yeah.
And and there he is doing a good job. Another one is Barry Larkin, a kid that played here. Now, you get Cincinnati games there?
Yeah, that's our home team here. We're about, 75 miles south of Cincinnati.
Okay, well, Barry Larkin, he was the best defensive back in the state of Ohio. Never played a down of football at Michigan. Came here. He was drafted out of high school by Cincinnati.
Yeah, he was.
Decided to go to school and then matured and grew up. And what he did, he ended up getting a chance to play a lot of baseball here. Then he played in the Olympics, and he got exposed to a lot of different things and played a lot of baseball. Then his junior year, he was drafted number one by Cincinnati, signed, went to Great Falls or one of those places in the Eastern League. From there, went to Denver, and he was at Denver just part of the season, and he's in the big leagues. And he still got money to sign.
You had Chris Sabo there, too, didn't you?
Sabo was another one.
How was he in college?
Pardon me?
How was he in college?
He was all right. I liked his talent. He could run pretty good. He was strong. He was a compact guy. I'm amazed that it took him quite that long for Cincinnati to discover that he could play. I really am.
I think he's in Nashville right now, rehabilitating.
Yeah, he's recuperating from a knee situation.
Yeah, he says he still can't run too well. That's a shame because he could move.
Oh, I know it. That's one of his assets.
Hopefully it'll come back.
But I liked him in college, the little bit that I saw of him. I liked him. He was a goaltender, I think, in hockey at Detroit Catholic Central.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a tough, hard-nosed kid.
You were a college football star.
Well, I wasn't a star, but I played. Yeah, played for 3 years.
Did you have a chance to go pro?
I was number one draft choice of the Bears, yeah.
That's what I thought, yeah. Why did you choose baseball?
Well, I guess, pro football wasn't quite like it is now. And, in fact, I remember Martin, our backfield coach, and then Fritz Kreis, our head coach, and they said, well, you don't want to play pro football, do you, Don? They weren't advising guys to go into the pros at that time. And the money maybe wasn't that good, and I'd always wanted to play baseball, and I got that wish. You know, George Sisler saw me play. He was with the Dodgers scouting at that time, playing at Wisconsin. Saw me play and liked what he saw, and so I went to New York, and I went in and sat down with Mr. Rickey. And he said, and he had been a baseball coach at Michigan at one time. In fact, he had Sisler.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, son, what do you want to sign? And I told him what I wanted. And he said, okay. And I said, son of a gun, I should have asked for more. But I did get a big league contract at the time, so they must have thought I had some ability.
You went straight to the Dodgers, didn't you?
I went straight to the Dodgers out of college. Just stayed for a little bit, and then went to St. Paul.
How'd you do there?
Well, I struggled a little bit the first year getting organized, you know. The thing that one regret that I do have, there used to be a league that was much like the Cape Cod League. It was called the Northern League, and Ray Fisher was a baseball coach, my baseball coach in Michigan. And that league was a great league to play in the summertime. But it was disbanded during the war, so consequently I didn't get a chance to play. But had I had the opportunity, that would have increased my number of games to 3 times 60, so there's 180 games that I would have played more, and I'd have been better prepared, I think.
What about your college schedule up there? It's that's cold weather. What, does it hurt it much?
Well, they play a number of games. They play 50-some games.
That's
and,
plenty.
What they'll do, they'll take a spring trip. This year, I think the team is supposed to go to Las Vegas on a tournament. So they play enough baseball games. That's not a problem. They do that. They increased them in the Big Ten Conference, in which they play double headers on Saturday and Sunday, and then they play during the week. So they get enough games. It's okay. There's no problem there.
You went you went to the Browns, and then you were with the Tigers, owned by them for several years. I remember it's a long time ago, but you had a good year, I think, in Buffalo.
Yeah, I that year I hit 300 and something. I forget. I don't remember what I had a decent year, and then they brought my contract at the end of the year.
Are you regular the next year?
Yes, yeah, I think I played about 135 games, and it was great, really. In those days too, we used to only play 14 night games.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of good.
Yeah, that's
a good routine. Yeah,
I'm not crazy about the night games, but I guess if you want to watch TV, that's what you have to have.
Yeah.
How much did you make? What was your top salary?
Pardon me?
What was your top salary
I think I got up to about 9,500.
Wow. That's meal money today.
Well, I tell you, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's amazing. You know, you really had to sweat, and you had to battle like anything for salaries, you know. And it wasn't easy. Battled hard and did what you had to do.
Was 54 your
off season?
Was 54 your last year?
54 was my last year as a player, and then I scouted and did some things with the farm system, went and ran tryout camps and worked with kids and organized teams, and then in spring training would do the same. And then I left that to become a coach in the big football club.
Well, you were a scout. Did you scout or sign any big names?
No, I can't think of any. I can't just write off hand, no.
Nobody that stands out?
No.
Who were the best players that you played with or against while you were in the majors?
Probably, I think the best player I played against was Mickey Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had as much ability in his body as anybody ever put on a uniform. He could run faster. He had more strength. Could do it all. Just unfortunately, he had the injuries.
Yeah.
And then playing against Joe DiMaggio would be, that was a real thrill, you know what I mean, to
love
watch
that.
Him in action because
yeah.
He did everything so gracefully. Another one would be Stan Musial. You'd always stop when you're warming up before the game and before you're going to take infield. You're doing it, and then these guys came in the batting cage. It would be Ted Williams, best hitter I ever saw. And then you'd have Stan Musial. Then you'd have Mickey Mantle. And then you'd, Willie Mays. But I played against Willie when he was at Minneapolis, and then he went up to the big leagues with the Giants. But that's some of the great players. And then playing with guys, I think probably as you watch K-Line play, he was kind of a weak kid when he joined. You know, he just wasn't mature enough, a little kid out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could see him gain some strength as he went along. But he did everything so well in the outfield. He never took anything for granted. When you circle on a ball properly, doing it all like you're supposed to, he wasn't one of these guys that would cut the pie. I've seen him make just great plays, but he was so fundamentally sound in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
And just really good. So from that standpoint, he and then just a good hitter was a guy like Harvey Keene. And the guy that had a great year for us was Ray Boone. I mean, I forget him, 128 runs he drove in that one year or something?
I don't remember. He was my absolute hero as I was a boy. You were one of my top four or five favorites, but God, the sun rose and set with Ray Boone.
Yeah, well, his youngster is, what a great kid he is, by the way. We were in Detroit and saw him play Kansas City.
Bob?
With Bobby.
Yeah.
And saw him and came over to the, we were sitting in the box and we chatted for a long time. And he works harder than anybody. You look at him at 40, 41 years old, I think he is now. And his body is like a kid 30 or 28 or whatever.
Wow.
Just in great shape and works at it. I mean, he really punishes himself. And that's the reason that he continues and is able to catch. He said, if I didn't do that, he said, I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Oh, yeah, this new league they proposed for the senior players, the catcher limit is 32 years old.
Yeah.
I guess there's no signs of him slowing down just yet either. He's still hitting 270 or something.
To keep going on. In fact, he seems to be swinging the bat better. You know, he seems to be hitting well, and that's nice to see.
Yeah.
But he's a good, solid kid, got his head screwed on properly. Got a brother who, Rodney, who graduated from, I don't know where he went to school, but I think Bobby went to Stanford, and they're kind of in business together, with Rodney being the guy doing some real estate stuff.
Didn't Rodney play minor leagues for a little while?
I don't know if he did. He might have a shot at, but he just didn't have the talent.
Yeah.
And the mother used to be a stand-in for, I can't think of her name now. Esther Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in swimming. And they're still very, very health conscious, you know, working at keeping the bodies in shape.
That's good. That's something.
Both she and Ray look great. And Patsy is her name.
You've got to instill that in them.
Uh-huh.
Bob's got a boy that evidently plays pretty well.
Well, I don't know that much. He talked about his family, but we didn't get an in-depth conversation about that family.
Yeah, I've read about him in a few of the magazines. I don't remember his name right now. Is it USC or UCLA, I think?
But he's a California boy through and through, you know. They were San Diego is where they were raised.
Mm-hmm. You still obviously follow baseball very closely.
Well, I follow it to the best of my ability, and now with Freehand coming back as coach, I'll get a little bit more involved because I feel so kindly towards this guy, and he really do a good job for our program.
Tell me about changes. You've been, about 45 years since you first started, almost 45 years since you first started playing.
Uh-huh.
What kind of changes, what are the major changes you've seen or feel have been made?
Well, I think from a uniform standpoint, equipment standpoint, that's been a big change. I think from an amateur standpoint and using the metal bat, that's been a big change.
You think the metal bat will ever be in professional?
I don't think so.
It's a scary thought, I think.
Well, it really is, because it's amazing. See, when you scout now and you see a kid and he shows some power, say in a high school or college level, and then you put the wooden bat in his hand, and now the ball doesn't go as far. You know, they hit it in your fist. They do a lot of different things. So it's an adjustment. That's a big adjustment that a youngster has going into professional baseball, playing every day, and the grind that goes at it. And that's where that maturity I was telling you about earlier has to come. That's one. And then the bat is another adjustment they have. So that's the changes. The other change is so much night ball versus when I played. We used to play day ball and night ball, but Detroit was fortunate only having to play 14 night games. And Boston, I think, was another one of the places that was, you know, great places to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other place, you go into St. Louis and you play all night ball.
Oh, it's so hot then in the daytime.
Yeah, and so I think that's a change that's come about.
What about the quality of the play? You were 16 teams when you played, 26 now.
Yeah.
What about the dilution?
I think the quality has gone down a little bit. I think the kids are bigger and stronger now. There's no question about it. But I do think the quality has gone down a little bit. You watch things and things happen that just really shouldn't happen. And you know, like you're looking through old-timers' eyes, some of the young guys say, what do you know about it? And you don't mean to be that way, but doggone, they just need some refreshers on the proper way to play the game of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And this goes because of complacency, I think. You know, they're paid big money, and they seem to, if they can't play here, they say, well, somebody else will want me, type of attitude. And it shouldn't be that way, but it's just a sign of the times and the way they do it. Like our football coach preaches attitude, and it's so important. Attitude is the difference in whether a team is successful or whether an individual is successful. And you'll get guys that just all of a sudden, and I don't mean to pick names, but here's a kid like Alan Trammell. What a terrific guy he is. I mean, he's got a great attitude, plays hard. He's hurting a little bit this year. He's had a bad back and some mm-hmm. things. You take another kid like Whitaker, great ability, but, you know, he's, like, now he's out of the lineup for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice Sparky's comments. Sparky said, well, whenever he tells me he wants to play, but it's a form of sarcasm.
Yeah.
But he said, well, what do I have to prove? Well, what do you have to prove? What you have to prove is that you're a professional baseball player, and every game you play in, you're going to give your best, and you're going to get yourself mentally and physically ready to play.
He just signed a. Pardon me? He just signed a big contract extension too. Seems like
the other thing, see, and that's what he was in. I remember Jim Cannon. So he'll probably have a good year this year because his contract's running out. So he's hit 25 home runs.
Yeah.
Said, what do I have to prove? What do you have to prove is that you're a gamer. You want to play. Are you serious about it? But it's this is what I'm saying. And here's a little kid out of Virginia that, you know, that. And look back in his youth a little bit when he was really, really hungry and what the game was all about. And it's how they change in attitude. It's amazing. The other day, the scorer gave him an error on a ball that apparently should have been caught. And his big concern, he said, well, I don't know how they gave me an error on that ball. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got ability and should catch it.
That's the same attitude we see in kids.
Well, that's the point. See, and here's Morris out there, and he's busting his butt.
Yeah.
And if everybody doesn't bust their butt, then the pitcher's the guy that ends up paying the price.
That's what's got to be.
And so that makes it difficult. So I would say that is some of the changes. And as I say, I'm talking like an old-timer because some of the young guys say, what do you mean? And I'm not – this is a general statement. And you can pick out specific individuals, and then you can pick out other guys that will just play as hard as they can play all the time.
A friend of mine is, I don't know if you ever come across him, Gene Thompson, pitched for the Reds way
yeah,
back.
I remember the name, okay. Gene, sure.
Yeah, he's scouting off the Giants, has been
right.
For years. And he,
for a lot of years.
He says that one of the real complaints that he has is the respect or lack of respect that the player, the kids today have for managers and management.
Well, that could be also. See, I don't know what to say along those lines because I'm not closely associated.
Right.
but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, he's still going to spring training every year, and he's just, you know, they, back when he played, they said, do something. It's yes, sir, and they went and did it, and now they question it, and they argue, and
that's a sign of the times.
What about any changes that should be made today?
Well, boy, I just don't know quickly. I really don't know how to answer that one. I really don't. I think sometimes it's going to have to be to a point where probably how much money can you pay guys and still be able to exist? Now they can, you know, they're going to negotiate a new contract for next year, and there's some talk about them going out on strike. But I think, you know, you got some of the owners that have a different philosophy. Like, there used to be guys in the game that this was their livelihood, and now it's in there because it could be tax purposes. It could be a little different approach. Not that they don't want to win, but it's a whole different approach. Whereas you go back to the Griffiths and you go back to Connie Max and different guys, and they had to win. This was their source, and this was their form of being successful, living, I mean, to be able to exist.
There was a one-person owner, now it's a corporation.